Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Corey is back with me. Corey,
yay!
This is like the ninth episode of the third season, and it is the first time you've been on for season three.
I know.
And it's because it's very upsetting.
It's because I don't remember why. When I was signing up for dates for this season, I was like, I don't know. And then I was sad that I hadn't signed up for more dates for the season because I was like, I haven't done this podcast in a really long time.
It's really sad.
My best friend keeps doing it instead.
I know. And it's wonderful. And I'm half tempted to like do one with the three of us, but then I think it would be a literal 4-hour podcast. And I don't know if people want to hear us talk for 4 hours. Today we're going to be talking about the Three Card Monty Job, which aired on August 8th, 2010, which will be the date that this podcast goes up on August 8th, 2019. So exactly, listeners, if you're listening on the day this is uploaded, exactly 9 years ago, which is really neat.
Wow. We did it.
I know. The last episode was halfway through the whole series, which is
mind-boggling.
But yeah, we're not going to think about that because it makes me sad already. So this episode was written by Christine Boylan and it was directed by Dean Devlin, which is a lovely combo. Christine Boylan has given us many good episodes, including The Miracle Job, and you can look them up on IMDb, but just seems to be really big, hard-hitting episodes for Nate. Not that most of them aren't hard-hitting episodes for Nate. He has a lot of feelings issues. But these are like people from his past where we really find out why Nate is the way that he is.
I was going to say that I like Nate. I mean, generally, I love that this writing team has like a large female presence because I think it is truly the thing that tips the balance, because the concept of this show could really go slide hard into dudes dooting doodly. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of that is the balance of genders in the writing room and the directing room. But I specifically like Nate as written and directed by women just because I think it makes him less one note than when you sometimes have a character like that in an all-male writing room.
Yeah. And if we didn't get that writing, like, not only would the show have as much resonance, I think, with people, but also like that would be a huge waste of having Timothy Hutton as an actor because he's so good at playing just like the little subtle. There's several, like, his face doesn't really change, but his eyes do. In this, and it's really good and it's heartbreaking and it's just chef's kiss. It's just beautiful. So in this episode, Nate's past comes back to confuse and complicate a job involving Russian mobsters blackmailing small business owners into doing their dirty work.
It was a confusing... The con the Russians were running was confusing.
Yes, which I loved because it's really a payoff sometimes. Because as I said before, I watch each episode 3 times to prepare for us talking about it. And sometimes watching it 3 times, I'm like, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, finally.
I did rewind the beginning and watch it a couple of times because I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. Also, Corey, be honest with me. Did you choose this episode because of David Meunier, or however the heck you say his name, aka Johnny Crowder from Justified? Who plays our main Russian bad guy. Pieter.
I did not, but I was very excited to see him.
He like popped up and I was like, Johnny!
I know.
And he's like a classic actor who's in everything. Like, he has a recurring arc in Arrow and he's in a lot of things.
Hey, it's that guy.
Hey, that guy who has a Russian accent, but I'm pretty sure he's not Russian.
Not Russian. What I love this job, this episode, because Nate's dad is one of the only people who like kind of knocks Nate off his feet a little bit, and like I love seeing Nate not smoothly have everything in control and not be always be five steps ahead of everyone else.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you really chose this episode.
It is.
It wasn't because of the Justified link. Okay.
Anytime that there's a Justified actor involved, I'm not, you know, unhappy to see them show up on the
I'm trying to think of like what other Justified actors I would love to have on Leverage.
Every once in a while, Timothy Oliphant will show up in something, you know, like unexpectedly. I'm like, what are you doing here?
Well,
what's happening?
What's going on? When we were watching Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes. Wait, is the
freaking Boyd shows up here?
Okay.
That was great.
Speaking of hair, we have to talk about everybody's hair this episode at some point. Not necessarily right now.
Oh, okay.
I just had a lot of feelings about everybody's hair in this episode.
Oh, I'm really excited because I didn't really take note, except for after I read your tweet and I was like, I was watching Leverage when you tweeted that, by the way.
I did used to have that hair. Okay.
That's amazing.
Let's talk about what happens in the episode. We'll get to the hair.
So we start off right away meeting our, what we think is our big bad guy, this Russian guy played by David Meunier, AKA Johnny Crowder. And he's threatening this man who obviously works for a telephone repair company. You can see his truck. And they say that they'll hurt his two little daughters if he doesn't do what they tell him to do, which is they give him a little, the weirdest, skinniest, tiny little flip phone. And they say, when we call you, you answer this phone and you do whatever we say. And if you don't, then we're going to kill your kids. And so he can't go to the cops because they'll know. And he knows about Nate somehow, so he thinks they won't catch him if he goes to this bar because they've been following him. And he like gives this up to Nate. And he even says that his family left Russia because of this sort of thing, Russians fighting Russians. So like he has this kind of connection to these people. And that's how I guess they
chose him.
Chose and picked out people because later we see somebody else in there. They're Russian as well. And then the third person, we never actually hear them speak. So maybe Russian? I don't know.
Who knows? And, no one knows.
Yeah. So all three of them, but Nate, Sophie, and Hardison are all there to meet with him. And I mean, it's so Hardison can clone his phone, but we don't normally get that many people meeting unless, you know.
Yeah, especially because
Parker's angry about it or something like that. Or Elliot's creepily listening.
It seems at the beginning like here's a guy who's been in the bar a few times who has like this shady thing that's happening to him, but it's like it seems pretty small potatoes in the grand scheme of like things that the Leverage team has taken on. It's not like insurance fraud or like, you know, racehorse fraud or, you know, any of the like major scams that they've taken down. It's like, these Russian guys are threatening me. Can you make them stop? You know what I mean? Which,
yeah, it's
like, seems like
something
small...
hasn't happened yet too.
Yeah.
Like mostly, yeah. Most of the time it's this awful thing happened to me. Please help me fix it. Or, you know, get justice for it.
Justice.
This is like something is going to happen. I'm going to be part of something. And it's proactive. He wants to stop it before it happens.
Yeah.
Which I think is like the first time that's happened.
It's definitely not the regular course of events.
No.
It's
which is
definitely
neat.
Like this burned down and you find the arsonist or, you know,
my husband's already dead. Yeah. So Hardison clones the phone and then he gives it to Nate to give back to the man instead of giving it to the man sitting next to him. Just really like showing this is the, like the pecking order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's in charge.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Cause we know that Hardison wants to run his own crew and like run his own cons. And he's really confident about different parts of that, but he's still like, Nate is the boss. Here you go.
Right. For this con.
Yeah. So Nate says that they will contact him and Sophie promises that they're not going to let anything happen to his family. And she seems like, I hate when people say that in shows like this, because I'm like, oh gosh, that means
right, something
they're
terrible.
Not. Yeah.
So Then Hardison has this whole hilarious thing about, like, if there's a CPU, I can hack it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like extremely, this, he's in the apartment the whole time, and like they just keep cutting back to him, and like his little snippets are hilarious the whole time. Like, he's not out on the con, he's just having these like little moments in the apartment by himself. He's like,
he's so good just like acting to an empty room.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not looking like a crazy person. But yeah, they've been able to track the phone back to Pieter. And Elliot and Parker are going to go figure out what's going on. And we see when they call Pieter, he's with this other bald dude in like a wife beater tank top, and he's covered in tattoos, and he's got a Russian accent as well. And that's who Elliot and Parker see when they pull up to this warehouse. And Elliot's using his, you know, his knowledge to kind of see what this means about this guy. He's like, he's got a cathedral tattoo on his neck. It's got three spires. That means he has had three tours in prison. There's a star on his hand. That means he's a captain of the mafia.
Right.
And, you know, he's getting all this information about this guy.
Meanwhile, Nate and Sophie are off on their own. Like, there's split screen. I mean, it's not split screen, but it's split screening between Nate and Sophie, and Parker being in the van and sort of making trouble for Elliot, who is trying to beat this guy up, throwing Elliot a crowbar to help him, hitting him in the back of the head with it.
Well, I love, like, they're supposed to be searching this guy's car for some incriminating evidence, and she's not finding anything. And he's like, Keep looking. And she's like, I've looked three times, but sure, I'll look again. Like, I don't know how to find something in a car. Okay. And it's at this point that they're just, like, annoyed, and they get sloppy, and the guy hears them. And Oh my gosh, when she's like, here, there's a crowbar. She just throws it at him.
And it fully catches him in the back of the head. And he just, like, picks it up and starts fighting. He's like, well.
He like, does that thing where you, like, rub your head and you're like, oh. But he's too pissed and he's got to fight this dude so he can't focus on his head injury.
Oh.
I wish that later you'd seen him, like, popping some Tylenol or something.
Yeah.
That would have been great. Or like with an ice pack.
Yeah.
You see Sophie and Nate, they're tailing the Russians who are just kind of like walking around, getting some hot dogs from a hot dog vendor. And we get to hear more about Sophie's kind of her philosophy behind theft. Because she's like, these guys are the worst. They're awful. And Nate says, what were you doing when I first met you? You know, you were a thief as well. And she's like, I stole paintings from rich people who could afford to lose paintings. Like, these guys are bad. You blackmail an innocent man and he's plagued by guilt and shame the rest of his life over doing this thing that you made him do. She chose crime. Andre, who's the victim, didn't. And I'm like, I think that's so fascinating about Sophie, that she's like, crime's not always good.
Yeah.
Sometimes crime is good, but sometimes it is not. Okay, so they're following the Russians, and they're like, where are they going? Where are they going? And, oh, no, they're stopping at McCrory's, which means they've obviously they've reversed the phone call, and they're coming to get Hardison, and he's going to die.
They're coming to get Hardison, and they're like, Hardison, they're coming for you, and Hardison is, like, grabbing his orange soda, and, like...
his laptop is orange soda,
yeah.
and nothing and else.
He's wearing this amazing white, like, offside zip-up jacket that I deeply want to own for myself, but I would spill orange soda on.
Yeah.
In a minute, because Hardison is a great deal more coordinated than I am. And he looks beautiful in it. He looks
so beautiful in it.
Very beautiful in it. I just feel like it's important to note that he is killing that jacket.
Yeah, every look. I mean, I think Hardison looks good in everything, even like the weird pastel plaid that they did the one time when they were pretending to be like Miffy and Bunny or whatever they called themselves. Anyways, in this very sad parent's job.
Okay, then they walk in, though, and they're all in the bar. All the Russians are in the bar.
Yeah. Oh, they have to sneak in the back. Because also, hang on, there's only one exit from Nate's apartment, and that is through the bar, which seems like just a bad plan.
I don't think that's what Nate would set up.
Like, no, especially after what happened to their last headquarters.
Yeah, no.
No.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, Hardison's like, I will blow a hole in your bedroom wall, Nate, and, like, Spider-Man out.
But they walk in, and all the Russians are in the bar, and they're like, oh, they're not here for you. And Hardison's like, yeah, no, I knew that. I was not panicking. Everything's fine.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. It's fine.
It's fine.
Drinks 2 liters of orange soda in relief.
Yeah. But with the Russians who are sitting around in the bar is sitting around with them. Dun, 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 dun. Big reveal with like swelling music and like a camera shot. And like, it is Nate's dad.
But wait, I thought Nate's dad was dead, you say? Because in the bottle job episode, another big emotional episode for Nate, another episode written by Christine Boylan, it was implied that he is no longer with us. But no, no, that just meant
he was in the pen.
Just because he was in jail. Same thing. Dead, in jail, whatever.
Dead prison, fine.
Either way, Nate didn't want to talk to him ever again.
Yeah.
So.
And he's so excited to find him in his bar, his home.
Oh, yeah, and including, like, he's taken over the back room.
Yeah.
And Sophie gets to make, like, a Three Little, or Little, or, was it Goldilocks reference, which is very nice.
I feel like there's more than one fairy tale reference in this episode, but I can't remember what the other one was, but I feel like I noticed, anyway, I should have gone back and watched it again.
Oh man. Okay. I'll think on that and see if I can realize or figure that out. Also, Elliot kind of like bests the guy that he's fighting with the crowbar. And we find out that he's not actually a Russian mobster. He's another victim. He has one of the red cell phones.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? I have the phone. I'm sorry. So
yeah.
So Nate's dad, and he's actually the guy running this whole thing, not the Russian mob. And his like motivation for running this job, whatever it is, we don't know yet, is kind of heartbreaking. So he was in prison because he went to the Irish families, and the Irish families are going down legally, they're being taken out by the feds. And so he gets out, and he's not getting taken care of the way that he was promised and he expects. So he wants his prize. He wants his money. And then he and Nate have every conversation with them is like super loaded. It's really prickly. It's
heavy. And also there's all of their conversations have 5 pounds of baggage attached to them. But also the show keeps flashing back to Nate as a child.
Oh my gosh.
Getting taught how to play a 3-card Monty by his dad, but his dad is a real dick about it.
Yeah.
He is you're never gonna get this, you're never gonna get at this, you're never gonna amount to anything, you're never gonna
understand. Are you kidding me?
Why are you so dumb about this?
That little boy, so it's a different little boy from the other flashback that we had and a different dad. Because I think the dad in that first flashback in the bottle job was actually Jonathan Frakes. But that little boy looks so much like Nate. It'll flash to him in the present, and I'm like, oh my god, this poor baby. And this is why this guy was going to be a Jesuit. This is he wanted to be a priest. This is why this guy became an insurance, whatever that's called. Because he wanted to be as different from this abusive asshole as he possibly could.
Yeah.
And it's
a really good offset with this sob story that his dad is telling about how he took the fall and he was supposed to get this stuff and now he's out and he's not. And he almost, if you didn't have the flashbacks of him being such a jerk to his kid, he would almost sound justified. Like, not, he would still be a mobster doing a terrible thing to people in the present, but it would be like, well, he thought he was set up for life and he thought he was doing his one last job and now he's not. Then you get to see that, like, all of the, I think a lot of times with a character like that, you would see the wronged child saying, like, I know you better. I know that you're always like this. I know that, you know, you're never sincere, but you actually get to see at the same time the background of the baggage that Nate has about his parenting. And so you're like, oh yeah, this guy's just a dick.
Exactly. And then, and he goes on and on about, like, the families respected me, everybody in the neighborhood respected me, but you never respected me. And that, like, with the, you know, coming right off the back flashback of, like, him yelling at this small child for not understanding this card trick.
Right, like, right.
Well, why would he respect you? Yeah. I love, like, Nate now, like, you can see he probably, you know, he's still that little boy inside where he's kind of scared of his dad and, like, wants to impress him. But he's also, like, he's seen things. He's like, I've been to prison and you can't scare me. I stabbed a dude in prison.
And he's really mad. Like, he's not just mad at his dad for, like, being his dad, right? He's mad at him for, like, coming into territory that he knows belongs to Nate. Nate is like, this is my town. I've worked really hard. I've staked it out. You know that it's my town. And you're running a con in it with the absolute knowledge that it's my town. Like, that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. And Jimmy, which is his name, Jimmy Ford.
Yeah.
Like, not at all intimidated or scared. And he's like, you can't be me. You're not tough enough. You don't have it in you. Which keeps coming back in this episode. And Nate's just trying not to be affected by this in front of these Russian mobsters, in front of his dad. It's awful.
And Sophie is immediately like, we don't have to do this job. Like, we don't have to go up against your dad. You don't have to take your dad down. And Nate's like, oh, I do.
We're doing it. Which I, like, she's like, we don't have to do this job, right on the heels of her promising this man, like, we will make sure your family is safe.
Right.
I love Hardison is, like, just tiptoeing around trying to prep this. He's like, so Jimmy Ford, Jimmy Ford, he wears a lot of evil hats. And he does. And then it's so funny because you see all these pictures of him in different hats. And then I just keep thinking of every time Nate does a, like, when he's doing a con, like, he goes with a different hat.
He has a different hat. It's from his dad.
I get that. It's genetic. But yeah, he's like, I just feel really bad doing this job with your, you know, against your dad. And Elliot's like, I don't. Let's go. I'll take him out. So Nate's like, it's fine, I'll do it. So he's a bookie, turned loan shark, turned fixer, turned king of the neighborhood. Just kind of climbing, he just kind of climbed that slimy ladder. And so they're trying to figure out what the game plan is. This new guy that they met via Elliot beating him up with a crowbar runs a shipping company that kind of specializes in textiles, like uniforms and stuff.
Right. They're trying to figure out, like, what the Russians actually want. Like, why are they blackmailing people into doing weird shit for them?
And they just keep, like, picking up, like, little tiny bits of information. Andre is a telephone repairman, and he has some big contracts, but nothing, you know, he doesn't know what it would be. And while...
So, is this where they go get coffee and run into the cops?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Just a little bit. So Sophie is, like, still trying to convince Nate to, like, just sit this one out. And they have this beautiful scene where he's, like, standing in front of this, like, their glass thing where they, like, write the plan on. And they have Jimmy's picture, like, superimposed on it. And you, like, they shoot through it. And so you see Nate, like, looking at this picture of his dad and saying that it would because she says it's not your job to take down your own dad, and he's like, no, it's my pleasure. And you're like,
yes, yes, it's so good. Oh, such a good line.
Such a good line.
So good.
But just like, because how do you follow a line that great? They have to immediately move into some action. So Andre has just gotten a call, like on his, on like the call on his phone.
Yeah.
They've tapped him to get into the police precinct during one of his routine maintenance calls and install a black box so that the Russians can spoof calls. So they can like stop alarms from going off or fake alarms and things like that.
Yes.
And it can't be turned off remotely. It's like too old fashioned. So, yeah. So they have to go into the police station to kind of fix this box.
Yes. So
Elliot and Hardison take Sophie to put her into the drunk tank. And she's playing princess.
She's playing a mob princess. And she is...
what's her name? Something D'Agostino. Viola D'Agostino.
And she plays it so perfectly. Like, it's very much like, don't you know who I am? But like very drunk housewives of Orange County.
Yeah, but also like it's like 11 a.m. it looks like.
Yeah. Like she's not over the top. She's just like, I'm a D'Agostino, and the cop is like, oh god.
Yeah. Okay, we gotta hide you away so that the press can see this.
Yeah.
And
it's this big mob family, and so she's
real quick,
her whole body is like limp. She's like falling. It's real good work by Sophie. And she doesn't get a lot to do this episode in the con.
Plays like a couple characters like really quick. Yeah,
mostly like chatting to Nate about bad life choices that he's making.
And her philosophy on
her other job.
Yeah.
And this life, but. She doesn't get to do a lot of conning.
True.
And it's a really nice moment from her.
Yeah. The detectives that Hardison and Elliot are playing are called Moffat and Davies, which were the Doctor Who showrunners, Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat, which I love. Like, that's so great.
I love the reference. Stephen Moffat is one of my top five most hated human beings on this face of the earth. However, very funny.
Yes. So we don't have time to go into all my feelings.
We don't have time
because they are going to
have to hate Moffat. It's okay.
No time. It's so,
but we love Doctor Who getting referenced for fun in the middle of.
I know, that's like part of me is just like, I just want to name all of the Doctor Who references in Leverage, and I would just be happy. So, but of course they bypass the drunk tank. They don't actually put her in there, and they get to the alarms. Hardison puts in a better black box. It's more high tech. And, what was I going to say? Oh, because they're going to be able to track the alarms along with all the calls and stuff. Mm-hmm. But Nate says, you know, because they're not going to be able to stop the Russians from doing this, they're just gonna have to help them,
right?
And they should have known when he said that before they went in that something was going down, because when they all go to meet back up again at the parking lot, Nate and Lucille 2.0 are gone. And I love that we know that this is Lucille, like he has named her. He's like, Lucille 2.0. And you know, some of them are kind of like, where did Nate go? What's happening? But Elliot knows exactly what's happening, and he's very angry. Like,
okay, I just want to say that this is the point at which I was like, everyone's hair looks incredible in this episode. Nate's hair looks like Nate's hair, but Elliot has this like early 2000s flip going on with his long bob. Which is a flip that I know exactly how to get with a blow dry and a round brush, because I had that exact hair. my best friend to her senior prom in 2002. I don't have pictures, but I definitely had that exact hair with that little like two-layer flip.
I don't understand how you don't have pictures of this for me, and I'm so upset.
Had that exact hair, and his is better. It's shinier. I mean,
he has professional people doing it.
Lustrous. But then Parker's hair is like swinging behind her, and it's like this golden, like just everybody is looking. I was like, man, they're doing some work. Hair and makeup's doing some work.
And they're all like running. I love like they stop there and like Sophie has escaped out like a back entrance. Like she didn't go with the guy. She met up with Parker and she's kind of like a little out of breath. And yeah, she's got her like mob princess hair.
Yeah.
It's all like a really good look on everybody.
Everybody's just looking very beautiful.
And Elliot's doing the Joey from Friends where like you look like you smell something and you're like very upset. You look off into the distance.
So anyway, Nate's gone.
So Nate has just taken Lucille 2.0 and stranded his team at the police station, and has gone back to the bar, and he's turned around and he's telling his dad that he wants to join up.
Yes.
And he tells him that like he let the repairman loose and he took care of it. And he's got a more elegant solution to their problem. And he has this little remote to their black box. And he says he wants in on the con. And he'll destroy this the little remote if he doesn't get what he wants. So.
Yeah.
Which is like a huge turnaround from the night before when he's like telling his dad all that stuff.
About
my territory and I don't like you being a bad person. And now he's like, you know what? I want in on this.
Yeah. His dad is reticent.
Mm-hmm. And Peter doesn't want to trust him.
Right.
And then Nate brags about what he did to get out of prison. He's like, you know I went to prison, right? Like, you know that I... He's like, well, anybody can do that. And he's like, you know I framed the warden and I got out, like, on a deal. Right? And I did that all from inside of prison. Do you want to mess with me? So Jimmy's like, yeah, sure, he can be in. That's cool. And he reveals his plan, which has like these targets on different banks kind of north of the police precinct. And then I love this next scene because it fades from the paper map that's on this bulletin board downstairs to upstairs in the apartment with the same map on the screens and Parker going through each of the banks and like reciting like how many guards they have, like if they have a Glenn Reader safe system, they like, you know, the type of video recording they have, and it's so good. And she's just like so into it, and then it pans over and you see everybody's reactions, and they're all different, and they're all great. Because Nate's just like, wait, what? Sophie is just smiling and just, like, glowing. She's so proud of her.
Proud of my little girl.
And she's like, she's so beautiful. It's so great. I'm so proud of her. Hartson, like, he's got his hand over his mouth, and it just looks like he's taking mental notes. He's just like, okay, this is good. And Elliot's just like, what the hell is wrong with you? And then he says, what the hell's wrong with you?
She's like, what do you do with your Saturdays?
Yeah, like, and I get that. We all have hobbies, okay? Her hobby is this.
He hyper-focuses.
Mm-hmm.
She hyper-focuses.
She has a few things that she really, really loves. And the number one thing of those is money. And where do people keep money? Banks.
She really likes to know how she could rob a bank if she needed to.
Yeah, I mean, it comes in handy way more often than you'd think.
It's coming in handy right now.
Right now.
She's very useful to do.
Exactly. Yeah, and I don't need you judging her, Elliot.
Elliot has a kitchen garden.
Yeah.
Parker.
Elliot sleeps 30 minutes a day. So,
knows how to rob banks.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is Elliot doing?
Elliot, you can ride a horse.
Other people.
You can play the guitar. You can sing.
You can play hockey.
You play baseball. Like, maybe don't mock people.
Yeah. Please don't mock people's hobbies.
Especially when they're so happy about them.
Especially when you have the 2002 flip.
In 2010.
Yeah. I had that haircut in 2002. Welcome, Christian.
It's a classic. It's a classic. He's just getting around to it.
Is it? Okay. So anyway, they know everything about all the banks.
Yes. So the plan is to distract the precinct by setting off the alarms at all these other banks, but Jimmy won't tell Nate what they're distracting the police away from.
Right.
And so Nate's trying to get his dad to trust him, and they need to get security plans from this one specific dude. And Jimmy's plan is to get his Russians to like mug him, like beat him up, take his stuff.
Right.
And Nate's like, well, how about we not? And we could just do this different thing. And it only takes two people and he'll never know.
I'm gonna run a very nice con where no one gets hit in the face.
Yeah. And this man is very sweet. So I'm very glad he didn't get beat up.
So nice. So Jimmy and Nate go to the parking lot where this guy is, and they run this little old man who dropped his heart medication sleight of hand.
Yeah, it's like, great. Like, and it's so smooth. It's like they've been doing it forever. So I'm like, Jimmy, obviously you know how this how this goes.
Right.
Why are you like, yes, Russians, beat the shit out of this man?
Yeah. He just pretends to drop his meds, and then the very nice man stops and picks them up and chats to them about how he knows that the meds are really expensive because his dad has really expensive heart meds. And then they steal his shit. Yeah. And then he goes on his way with the rest of his life, and he's very, nice and pleasant.
Yeah, and he's just like, how did I lose that paper? I thought I had it in here.
Yeah. He's just not gonna beat up.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we get Sophie's next excellent bit of conning in this episode. Because she doesn't, like you said, she doesn't get one character that she plays throughout, but she does get a couple little wonderful things. So Hardison has been able to get background on Peter, and using Parker started saying, oh, he's he worked here, he did these things for the mob. And she's like, no, I want the interesting things. Where did he grow up, and his mom's name.
Right.
And so she's going to do the little orphan Annie and to distract him so Parker can get some information about what they're working on. And she Parker lifts the apron off a passing waitress, which is what? How the heck do you do that? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she pretends to be a waitress, and she drops a glass when he tells her to get out of the room. And she
curses Russian.
Yeah. And he's like, oh. He's like, yeah. Pretty lady is speaking Russian. Yeah. Okay.
Russian.
And then so he's flirting with her. And it's so creepy because he's charming. And I'm like, oh no, you're bad right now.
Yeah.
But that's how I feel about that actor all the time. Like, I love Johnny Crowder, even when he was trying to kill Raylan.
There's something very I have this deep-seated distaste for a certain kind of charming bad boy that sleazy I there are portions of The Last Jedi I physically can't watch, because when Kylo Ren is on screen my body turns itself inside out from discomfort, and I'm just I hate you, get off my screen, I hate you. That prototype of smarmy bad guy that straight women, I don't know, I'm sorry straight women, you all with the same brush, but are very attracted to. I tend to hate that prototype. And they're all over, the smarmy alpha dude who knows what's best for you, or the whole guy who is beautiful and gets a redemption arc. That prototype I can't deal with. But Johnny Crowder and that actor is straightforward about being evil, right?
Yeah.
He's not like trying to like smarm you into thinking he's not evil and he's can be redeemed. He's just like, I'm a Russian monster. Want to go on a date?
And you would have to think for a second, like,
yeah.
Wait, no, no, I don't.
No, wait, no, I don't want to.
Please, no, no, you've killed people.
He's like, above board. He's like, evil cards are on the table. Yeah. And I appreciate that about him.
I feel like a lot of the Crowders are that way.
Yeah.
I think all the Crowders are like, hey, I'm evil. Like, even like dad, whatever Boyd's dad.
Yeah.
He was that way too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's how, oh gosh, what's his name? And he was like a bad guy in 80s movies. And then he was in Blacklist. James Spader.
Yeah.
That's how he is in Blacklist. Like, he's like older, but he's bad. Like, you know, he's bad, but he's just so like, yes, this is what I do. And I'm charming and I'm rich and I'm suave. And you're like, oh God, do I have a thing for James Spader?
Enjoy you?
I don't think I like this, but it's a thing. Whereas, like, James Spader in Some Kind of Wonderful, I'm like, beat him up, beat him up.
Oh, yeah, oh, my God. Punch him in the face right now. Because he's smart.
James Spader's in Pretty in Pink. No, yes, Pretty in Pink. Okay, sorry. It's not James Spader at all in Some Kind of Wonderful. I apologize.
No. It's the... Anyway. It's fine. It's fine.
Also awful. But... Okay.
But that character that he plays in that John Hughes movie is smarmy.
Yeah.
He's condescending and he's slimy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to charm you. And you're like, no, you're not.
Like, stop leaning on my car. Go away. They're like, those guys, I'm just like, okay.
They're like playing, like, rather than having their evil cards on the table, they're like playing evil footsie. And I'm like, get your feet away from me.
Yeah.
Feet are gross.
No.
Go evil.
If you're going to be evil, just be evil.
Be evil!
Lean into it.
Don't be whiny and evil.
Yeah.
And slimy.
Don't be like, I'm evil because I'm sad. Just be evil because it's fun and it's easy.
I'm evil and I know better than you. Go away!
Or just don't be evil.
Or don't be evil is an option.
It's totally a viable life option.
It's a choice.
Fictional arc option, you know. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I love him.
So that's cute.
I love him being himself. So he's hitting on Sophie. Sophie tells him that her name is the same as his mom's name.
Mm-hmm.
And he's extremely charmed by this. And she's playing this sort of like ditzy, like he's like trying to teach her words in Russian. And she's like, you have to slow down.
And then she says, manana. She's like, that's Spanish. And at one point, I, like, paused right there when she's like, that's Spanish. And, like, her mouth's up. And, like, her face is so adorable. Like, she just looks so open and, like, goofy. And I love it.
Yeah. So she's having fun with that part.
Yeah.
And Parker's totally charming.
Yeah. And Parker's in the background. Yeah, he's, like, literally charming, but even if he hadn't been charming, she would have been able to play like he was.
Yeah.
And Parker's in the background, like, she's snuck in the back door behind them, and she's looking inside their bags of gear, and she finds barcode scanners, and they're
trying they're like, what do you need a handheld barcode scanner for?
Yeah. They were partially inspired to use one of these because... two of the people in the writing room were getting married. So Christine Boylan had apparently gotten married recently because they were talking about how hard she worked. She's like, I took 2 days off for my wedding.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, my God.
But when she was registering, she was, like, barcode scanning at the Target or whatever.
Yeah, and I bet she was like,
Siri,
take a note, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't have Siri back then, but you know.
Yeah,
so Hardison and Elliot, meanwhile, are tracking the third phone because they figured out that there's a third phone and they don't know who it is. And they track it to this park and to this coffee cart. And then they They spot the police officer that they talked to when they brought Sophia into the police precinct, and he like remembers their names.
He's like, sweet, "What are you guys doing here? This is the best."
You have coffee. Yeah, and it's obviously like a cop hotspot. You can see several other uniformed officers standing around.
Yes. So he tells them they tell him kind of on the spot. You know, they're like trying to figure out why to tell him they're there.
Yeah.
And because they're not expecting to see him. And they tell him that they need some evidence because it went into their precinct, but it's part of a case that they're working on.
Yeah.
And the police officer says, like, you have to get there right now because all of that evidence is going out today.
Or tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, yeah. All that evidence.
So, like, to Mount Holyoke. Morning. Yeah.
Which is, like, the key piece of information to the whole house of cards.
And thank God this man had needed a cup of coffee right then.
Yeah, yeah.
And they see
I don't know how they would have gotten the answer to their problem without that piece of information right there.
Everything's connected.
Yeah.
And they see that the third phone is hooked onto the apron of the guy running the coffee carts. And they're just like, I think they kind of like push whatever the cop said to the background because they're like, what the hell is this random coffee shop dude doing with the phone? And they're just really confused.
Yeah.
And then we get another scene back in the back room at the bar, and Pieter is still angry that Nate's involved, which is like just this like petty kind of sibling rivalry almost. Like, dad likes me better. Well, this is my new dad. And they like fight.
Right.
It's pretty nice fight. They punch and Nate headbutts him and like gets pushed back, and his dad, you know, like, oh, you got it, son, I got your back, and like pushes him back into the fight. And then he's like icing his face because he got punched a couple times,
right.
And he has another heart to heart with his dad, and Jimmy's impressed. And they have this like moment where they're like talking about Nate's mom, and he's like, oh, you were always more like her, and she didn't understand me, but she loved me. And then he tells them that this is going to be his last job, that he's going to retire to Galway and go back to Ireland.
Always the last
still, because they still have some pretty cousins there. I was like,
such a sketchy line. Yeah, it's
what
gross.
The hell?
Yeah.
We have some pretty cousins in Galway. Like, and you stay the F away from them, you sick old man.
We're gross.
Yeah. So the next morning, Sophie's like, well, it looks like you had a late night. And Nate said, you know, I was buttering my dad up. And now he's going to tell me everything. And he goes down, and the room downstairs is
the room has been
empty.
Cleared out, and his pocket is empty, and he flashes back the way that Leverage does when we see the con from their perspective, but he sees that he got hit so that his dad could pickpocket him when he caught him of the black box.
Yeah.
Nate's black box remote.
Yeah, and his face, like, he's got his hands on his pockets, and he's kind of, like, leaning forward with his shoulders forward with, like, the, uh-oh.
Realize he got conned by his dad, who played him like a fiddle.
Like a fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So then we get the nice, I love when everything gets really tense and they're all standing in a circle and the camera pans around them, which is just always, like, a, things are stressful. We're trying to plan the last part of this con. And Sophie is like, you know, everyone's scrambling to try to figure out what we're going to do because obviously it's going down right now.
Right.
So Sophie suggests that Hardison find the other banks in the radius with a Hancock alarm system because that's what the map was. And Parker's like, oh, I already know how many. It's like 46.
I have some information right off the top of my head.
Yeah, and Hardison's like, okay, but it has to do something with this barcode scanner. Like, what is that for? And they don't, I don't know what they'd need them for in a bank. And then he's like, well, maybe the coffee guy's drugging the cops. And Elliot's like, oh, yeah, sure, drugging the cops. And he's like, well, do you have a better, idea?
Yeah.
And
what
so they're
else
kind of all
the coffee guy for?
Yeah, and so they're all like kind of squabbling, yeah. And then Nate is here stuck in another flashback, trying to figure it out, and we right. see the three card Monty game again and again and again, and finally we see Jimmy turn all the cards over, and you see that the queen is never even on
never
the table.
Been there, right?
Like, there's no way you can pick her, and he's like, "Oh, I got it."
This is all a distraction.
This is all a distraction.
But we don't see.
Yeah. So he remembers at the beginning when we find out about who Pieter was, we found out he's in the mob, the Russian mob, and they recently lost guns, drugs, and $20 million in a bust from the police. And yep. all of that evidence is still in the evidence locker in the precinct. And it's about to be shipped out to Mount Holyoke. What? So, and this is why we all talk to each other about everything that happens in a con, because every piece of information is important.
Yeah. You never know.
Exactly. So back at the precinct, all of the bank alarms start going off one by one because Jimmy's sitting outside and he's turning them on with the remote. And the poor cops are just freaking out. And basically, they empty.
Go here.
Like, who do I take? Everybody!
Yeah.
And amidst all of the chaos, who walks in first? Is it Jimmy? Yeah, Jimmy goes back first. And the cops who are driving the armored car, at first I was like, why did they just leave the armored car just sitting there on the side of the road while they got coffee? And then later, Pieter and the other Russians like stop their car and then they like switch them out. And I'm like, there's nothing in this armored car. And it's because they're going to pick up the stuff. That's why they're sitting
right.
there. And that's
right.
why you can just leave an armored car sitting there. It's empty. Right. Good
so
job,
they've
Christina.
Drugged the cops driving the armored car. The coffee guy was drugging the cops. That's what exactly
yes.
what he was doing.
See? Heard of something.
He drug the cop. The cop gets really drowsy, passes out. They take the armored car from him.
Mm-hmm. And then they pull up to the back of the precinct. Jimmy lets them in through the back door because he's been let through in the chaos. He's like, oh, I got an evidence transfer.
Yeah, and the guy's like, whatever, I don't care. Get out of here.
Yeah, you have a badge and you've got a clipboard. Yeah. You must be good to go.
Fine.
And he's so casual about it. Like, everything that Jimmy does, he makes it look like he's not doing anything bad. Like, it's,
right.
it's he's not, like, sneaking around on his tiptoes like a villain, which just kind of, like, seeks this long life of pretending and doing this
yeah.
kind of stuff, which is just really good.
And also, like,
good job, Tom Skerritt.
Like,
good job.
He has no conscience, right? Like,
right.
he's unbothered.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just familiarity. It's like, he just is not. There's like a missing piece.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just where he would like.
He's like a sociopath.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no fear. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah. So they get in. He lets the Russians in. He brings them to the evidence room, and they knock out the copies in there. And he tells them, here, like, take the scanners. They hook it up to the database. And he's like, the evidence is all barcoded. Just scan them until you find your stuff. And then you have 5 minutes until the system resets. Because he just, like, walks over to his box and, like, pops out a wire and, like,
right.
restarts.
Meanwhile,
it.
Hardison has been hard at work with the database of stuff they're scanning.
Oh, it's great.
So they start barcode scanning. They're trying to find the evidence that got stolen, not stolen, because the cops took it from the restaurant. They're trying to take the, like, cocaine that the police legally and rightfully absconded with.
Yes.
So that the Russians couldn't sell it on the street. But all they're getting is, like, toaster ovens. Like, I don't remember what actually came up on
the... like, plates, cutlery.
Yeah. Right.
And they're like, it's okay, keep scanning. We still have 2 minutes. We still have two
yeah.
minutes. Keep going. And they're just, like, frantically doing this.
Yeah.
Not even, like, being like, why would these things be an evidence lockup?
Right.
And then we have the return of Viola DeGastino, and everybody's favorite lawyer, Jimmy Papadopoulos.
Oh, my fave.
Oh, so good. And they come in, and the poor guy at the front desk is stressed out, and they're like, we're going to sue you and sue the city. Yes, best lawyer ever.
Character.
And Sophie has this, like, gold lamé trench coat on that I need. I really need that jacket.
Yeah, it's real good.
I think that would be really good for me.
So good. Yeah.
And in the hubbub, Nate's going to use this to slip in. But Jimmy has, you know, after he drops off the Russians, he sneaks upstairs to organize crime. And we see, like, there's just walls of evidence on all of the three families. And he breaks into this huge wall safe. Also, I'm pretty sure that building is the building that was the school in Fairy Godparents Job. Like, that, like, main staircase looks so much like it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it is. And
I mean, I'm sure they're reusing, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Portland lets them do whatever.
Yeah.
Like, here's another building you can use.
Yeah.
Dig a hole, like, for a coffin in our public park. And so he breaks into this huge wall safe, which was actually a safe that was in this room. And they were like, perfect. And he grabs the ledger of one of the guys in one of the families. And then he's like, ho, I got the ledger. And he's like looking through it. And then
the safe door closes. It's such a great shot. Like, he's just standing there in a room that he thinks is empty, like, gloating to himself, and the door closes, and he, like, startles and looks around, and Nate is just standing there, like, vampire cool.
It's the end of the line, Dad. And then he, like, pulls the gun and cocks the gun at his dad. But he doesn't even startle. He's just like, oh, what? Who's that?
What? What's going on?
Oh, hi. Also, though, I know that it was, like, all systems go because there are three bank robberies, but would the organized crime division be like, yes, we must be there at this bank robbery? I don't know how police stations run, so it's just occurring to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for the purposes of the story, it works.
Yeah.
And Nate, you know, they have like another heart to heart, and Nate says, you know, I knew it wasn't about the money. Like, for you, it's all about the respect and, like, what you think you deserve. And so he just wanted to steal this original ledger because it not being there is going to make the rest of the case fall apart against the families. And then they're going to owe him. Right. And he's like, come on, Nate, you can join me. We can run this city together.
Which is an absurd thing for him to, like, offer right after he has, like, really screwed Nate over. I mean, to be fair, Nate was trying to con him, but has just, like out-conned Nate, thrown him under the bus, like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, now he's like, come on, join me. I don't, like...
Like, where would that end? Because, you know, it'd be like, I con you, then you con me, then I con you, then you con me. And it's like, that's exhausting.
He doesn't mean it. He doesn't want Nate to join him.
No.
He thinks Nate is too stupid to know that. Yeah. He's lying. Because he has not actually spoken to his son in a meaningful way where he listens to him in...
Ever.
Ever. And so he doesn't actually know what Nate is like. And so he doesn't know that Nate's going to know he's lying immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And he tells him he doesn't want to go back to prison. And so Nate is, like, so kind and offers to shoot him.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I can figure it out for you.
Yeah.
But Jimmy, like, even though you're right, like, he doesn't know that Nate would know that he's lying. He does know that Nate isn't going to shoot him in cold blood.
Right.
And he's too much of his mother's son. And Nate's like, oh, you fucking had to bring mom into it. Okay, I probably could have done it if you hadn't said mom.
Yeah.
And so he's like, get out of here, and he leaves. Meanwhile, Elliot nut punches a dude, and it's great.
It's very good. Very good moment. Do you highly recommend for the nut punch?
just find the gift of the nut punch. So this is, it goes back to the Russians, and they're still, like, stressing out about finding these, their barcoded stuff, and it's just coming up with wedding registry things. And their timer that they keep looking at. They're like, it's okay, we have a minute. We have 2 minutes. We have 2 minutes. We're good. And then we find that Ellie or Hardison has been, you know, he hacked into the database. So he's been changing it to like Crate and Barrel stuff. And he also looped the time on their clock.
Yeah.
And then, so their 5 minutes is up and the system reboots and they're locked into the cage. And Hardison's there and he gets to say his catchphrase, age of the geek, baby. And then he's like, stay cool or something weird after that.
And then the cops walk in and they're like, wow, you guys just locked yourself in here for us, huh?
It's like a present. You should have been wearing a bow.
It's good.
So good.
I wish we...
Yeah, they were saying in the commentary that he's actually like a long-running like NPR like or like radio host or something in Portland. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Nate is sitting by himself in the organized crime division, which I'm like, OCD, organized crime division, like kind of disappointed in himself. And Parker shows up, like, what is that thing that she shows up and it's like these big doors? Like a huge vent that's above this safe that was obviously like in the building.
It's very strange.
Old buildings are weird.
It's super weird. It was like it looks like a giant air conditioning grate.
Yeah, but it was like a door, and they had like the wind or the ceiling like went up to like make room for the door. That's so strange.
Yeah,
and she shows up and sees that Nate has let Jimmy go, and she's not surprised or disappointed. And then she like throws him a rope to pull him up so they can get out. And then Jimmy, we see him walking down the road with the ledger, and he's on his phone, and he's calling the different families, telling them he has the ledger, but no one wants to talk to him. And
he keeps
hanging up, and he's getting like more and more frustrated. And then there's a car drives by and a very redheaded man. So you would know who these people are, that they're Irish, tries to shoot him, which is kind of scary. And like his reaction.
It is a little scary.
I mean, drive-bys are very scary.
Right.
But he like the way he like crouches down and he like is like curled up behind this pillar. Like, you're like, this is an
old man. I was behind a pillar. And then he like kind of sinks down.
Yeah.
And in the moment he looks really like old and like he's been walking down the street, like his hair is all windblown. He's like getting hung up on over and over again. He's getting like more and more like dejected. And then he's just like curled up in the fetal position almost behind this pillar, like having just gotten shot at.
Yeah. And he's kind of shaking and he just looks like lost, and then
like lost all his bravado.
And his phone rings again, and it's Nate, and he's like, Nate, what did you do? And it turns out he meets Nate down by the docks, and Nate tells him everything, and it turns out Nate called all of the families for his dad on his dad's behalf, and said that he'd stolen the evidence, the ledger.
So I guess the part where I said that there was a price on Jimmy's head, because Nate had called all of the families and asked. And so they're on the docks, this big steamer, basically ship behind them. And he tells Jimmy that he bought him passage on a ship back to Galway, because that's what he said he wanted. So
as he said, he wanted to go to Galway and see the pretty cousins.
That's what he said he wanted. And he even books him the ticket under his mom's maiden name, Jimmy Logue. Yeah. And, you know, they have like another moment where he's like, oh, you know what? You are as tough as me. You are as bad as me.
Yeah.
And Nate's face, like when I was talking earlier about Timothy Hutton, like his face
was
so good. Because he like, he still kind of smirks because he's been smirking his dad the whole time because he got the, you know, got him.
Yeah.
But he like, his eyes like flicker down. Like he's like, oh shit, that's not like, maybe not a good thing to be.
Great. But no, it's true. And his dad's like, wow, this was vicious and like extremely underhanded and cruel. You're amazing.
Yeah. Wow. You're like, I'm proud of you. I respect you. And he's like, oh, did I want to earn this man's respect? Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah. And so he like, you know, says something about his mom, and then he smirks and he like walks off to the gangplank, and Nate turns around and like the whole team is like right there.
Yeah.
Like just like alarmingly like, close.
They're like, oh, you let him live. That was so nice of you.
Yeah. Sophie says that was really kind. Which is not to like, yeah.
Are we going to start being nice now?
No, Nate's not going to start being nice. Don't worry. And then a much gift OT3 gif of like Hardison and Parker kind of walking away, and then Elliot like smiling and like walking after them. It's good. This is good. Yeah. And then like there's like kind of Irish music throughout that the composer made. Just really good.
It's a really like it's a really tight episode, like with the exception of not knowing what the Russians were doing for a while, like the beginning being a little bit muddy. It's very like,
well, that's the three card Monty of it all, right?
It's the three card Monty, like every beat really hits, and it's not like wait, what are they doing again? Or like, what's, I think the only moment where I was like, I don't know what's happening is at the beginning when Nate and Sophie are like going off to trail the Russians. I was like, what are they doing for a minute? But I also like, I have ADHD. So sometimes like the television.
Like, I think, yeah, I was, because that scene is so much about them talking to each other about what they think about crime.
Right. I was like, what are they doing?
Yeah. Like, why are they walking around like this?
Service.
And then you see them, you see the Russians in front of McCrory's, and you're like, oh yeah. Got it.
But it's just like, it was very tightly done, and it wasn't like, and I think we've talked about this. Like, I love the like big elaborate cons where at the end, it's like you get 18 steps that it shows you back that you didn't know what was happening. But I also love when it's just the like bait and switch, like his dad was playing three card Monty with him. And all he did was call, like the only like flashback is him calling the other families and saying, you know, dad has the evidence, and if you don't give him money, he will
give it back to the cops. Yeah. And they even say, Elliot says, you know, I bet your dad has a chessboard down there just like the one you have up here, and he says, chess is not my dad's game, my dad's game is three card Monty, because Nate lives for having 18 moves, you know, and like knowing from the beginning how you're gonna get checkmate, and his dad is lives just for I'm gonna make you think you can win this when really you have no choice, like no chance. It's good. It is a good episode. And they kept saying in the commentary, like, Christine Boylan just loves kind of like, she loves exposition. She loves finding out what characters are thinking and feeling. And she would just be happy if it was just a spotlight on each character and they just talked about their, you know, their motivation. Like, yes, I'd be okay with that.
Do you have a high slate?
Oh God, I did.
Okay. Do you mind? You can think of yours.
Yeah, do yours.
Okay. So I found this. You should give the whole thing. It was written by Robert Anglin for the Arizona Republic. This happened or was published back in March, and I wanted to find something like mafia related.
Yeah.
And this is so bizarre to me. So, okay. Imagine that you are a third generation made mafia prince dude, right?
Sure.
Like, you are a made man, like you murdered people, but you decide to turn state's evidence and like in like the biggest bust in like FBI history, you make a bunch of people go down, and the FBI puts you very kindly, very necessarily, into witness protection.
Sure.
And of course they send you off to Arizona. Mm-hmm. That's where they send everybody who's in witness protection, I'm convinced.
It's a hellscape.
And
I'm from there.
Yeah, so so what do you do? What would you do if this was you and you were in witness protection in Arizona? What would be your next move? And your new name is Frank Capri or Capri.
Move to Scottsdale and start scamming people in Scottsdale?
Oh, I mean, you're very close. Instead, he becomes like a secret contractor and is responsible for the... Okay, wait. How do I even frame this? So, the country band Rascal Flatts,
yes,
sold their name to a restaurant chain so they could use their name for merchandise and things like that. He was responsible for these restaurants failing nationwide.
Wow.
But this was, of course, only after he also wreaked havoc on developers of the Toby Keith restaurant.
So good.
It's like...
Toby Keith deserved it.
I mean,
Keith is a bad person.
Yes. But I don't think Rascal Flatts are bad people, but I don't know.
I don't know.
But also, like, neither Toby Keith nor Rascal Flatts were actually, like, involved at either of these restaurants beyond, like, oh, yeah, we'll sell you our name.
Right.
But, yeah, it is a long article that goes, like, way down into this. And all of the, like, the business that actually got the contract to do this franchise was run as partners. And one of them was this guy's girlfriend. But he was actually doing all this stuff. And the other partner's like, oh, no, I wasn't. Just in a name only. It was all Tawny. And it is just bizarre. Yeah. Ex-mobster. And, like, now he's, like, in the news again. I'm like, I don't know. Mobster's got a mob is all I can think.
Right. He was in witness protection. And then he just exploded the entire thing. Yeah. So I'm in this Facebook group for librarians who love true crime. I'm in like 15 separate secret Facebook groups. I want you to know there's one for librarians with Instant Pots. Mm-hmm. And
your face washes,
the face wash group. My face cult. I'm in one for McElroy fans who love like makeup, and one for McElroy fans who love like outrageous fashion. Anyway, one for true crime, sapphic true crime fans. So, girls who like girls.
Wait, all the true crime is sapphic in nature, or all of the fans?
No, the fans are sapphic in nature. Sapphic in nature. It's super niche. Mostly just Lizzie Borden. Anyway. That's not true. Aline, what's her name? That Charlize Theron played in Monster.
Yeah, what about is it Anne Rule?
Yeah.
History author.
Yeah. So, okay, so anyway. I know who you mean, though. She, like, writes mysteries, but she also killed somebody in Australia, and she was played in a movie by, what's her name? Kate Winslet. Oh, yeah,
Kate Winslet, you're right.
So I'm in this Facebook group for librarians who love true crime, and they regularly post amazing long form articles about like just banana pants stuff that is going on in the world of crime. And, I can't remember if anybody's talked about this, but there's the guy who was a dad at his daughter went to like Bryn Mawr or like some Ivy school. Mm-hmm. And he like moved into her dorm and like kind of started a cult amongst her friends. But then he also, so here's where the con part comes in. he also was like an FBI informant who had been like informing on the mob. And at some point, I will send you the article. I will find the article for you and send it to you so you can link to it in the show notes. At some point, he had met with like several presidents. He was like big in politics, and then he got, oh no, I lost you. Okay, I'm gonna just keep talking. He got found out for being like a crazy like con artist. Like, he didn't know the information that he thought he knew. He said he was in with the mob, but he wasn't. And so the FBI like cut him off as an informant, and so he like got kicked out of being an FBI informant. He has like a little personality cult around him. He's got like college student young women like living at his house and having sex on like his say so. So there's like creepy cult stuff. There's like a con involved. Also, he was like living at his daughter's college for like a year.
Yeah, like, seems stable.
There's so many layers. So many layers.
Wow. Yes. I'm gonna need that link.
It's a con and a half. Yeah.
It's, what is it Elliot says? That it's a 12 pounds of crazy in a 5 pound bag
or yes. Something. Yes. That is what it is. That is what it is.
And not nearly as lovable as Parker.
No. Not as cute.
I can't imagine. All right. Corey, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
They can find me on Twitter at Helen's Twin. H-E-L-E-N-S. Twin. I'm even unlocked right now. You can subscribe to my tiny letter that I just launched with my friend Flangel called 10th Grade Sex Ed, where we answer high school level sex ed questions, but for grownups who had terrible sex ed. So everybody, we are both trained sex educators as well as our other jobs. So you can do that if you're interested in that. And you can join the Storytime Underground on Facebook if you want to, or any of my other, if you fit into one of the criteria mentioned above, if you're a librarian who loves their Instant Pot or loves true crime.
Yeah, you can link you to any of these Facebook pages.
I have a million secret Facebook pages. It's the only reason I still use Facebook.
Yeah.
For the most part, you can find me on Twitter. That's the number one place to find me. Mm-hmm. On the Twitters.
Excellent. And as always, I'm at Librarian Steve on Twitter. And you won't see us again, but you're going to hear us again in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about the underground job. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. We had a Crowder in this episode, and in the next episode, we're dealing with a coal mine. It's all connected.
Justified is everywhere.
It is. It's everywhere.
Justified.
Even in the Marvel everywhere. Universe.
You'll never leave Harlan alive, man.